Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films, The Northman, Polar Bear, Russian Doll Season 2, Billy the Kid, and Doctor Who, The Legend of the Sea Devils. I'm also going to be talking about some news, The Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Star Trek Discovery. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Ezra Miller, who's best known recently for playing the Flash in the Justice League. They also played in the Fantastic Beasts movies. Well, Miller was arrested in Hawaii on the Big Island for assault. This is after their earlier arrest not too long ago of assault, and Ezra Miller's had some blemishes. It seems like they're not exactly level-headed, that there's probably some sort of, and I'm no doctor, so this is not a medical diagnosis, but I imagine there's some desperate need for therapy. This is a big deal because not only is Ezra Miller a main character in The Secrets of Dumbledore, which is out now, just opened last week, but they're also playing the Flash in the Justice League movies and the Flash film, which is going to be coming up some point. You know, I mean, has Warner Brothers yet learned its two lessons? I don't think they've learned. First of all, not to employ people as actors that are lightning rods for controversy. I mean, they had to get rid of Johnny Depp from the Fantastic Beasts movie. They're probably going to have to get rid of Ezra Miller from that. But I don't know how you replace them in the Flash, because Miller's actually really good as the Flash. There's a charisma to their personality on screen. They come across really, really well. And you don't always play the person you are on screen. And there's many examples of actors who do not mimic their characters on screen, or are not as pleasant, or sometimes not as mean as their characters on screen. First of all, we have to realize, as humanity, that the characters people play on TV and in the movies do not represent themselves in real life. They're working off a script. A great example is the woman who played the daughter in the Absolutely Fabulous series. In the series, she's very straight-laced and does everything very proper, and she's completely together because her mother and her mother's best friend are such dumpster fires and train wrecks of people. But apparently this woman is kind of a mess herself in real life, and acknowledges it and says, you know, like, I'm not good at relationships and all these problems. But just because somebody plays somebody a certain way in the public eye does not mean that that's how they are. And some people have really good charisma on camera, but in the personal life, they're kind of horrid. And I imagine that Ezra Miller has some issues that are deep-seated. It seems like they've got some violence and rage issues. I mean, they threw a chair at somebody or something like that. I mean, this is, you know, Jerry Springer kind of nonsense. So, yeah, this is going to be a problem for Warner Brothers going forward, because they may have to completely recast The Flash, which means that they're going through the process of having to recast a lot of people, from Affleck to Henry Cavill, and now probably Ezra Miller, and there's movies in the pipeline. So this is going to be a real problem. We'll see how this shakes out in the future. The next little piece of superhero news that's interesting is there's a shifting release date. The Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse movie has shifted into the summer of 2023. It was supposed to come out later this year. I think it was going to be either later this summer or in the fall. And I'm curious to see whether that is trying to distance itself from Morbius, because Morbius is a flop. I mean, it's crashing and burning at the box office right now, and it makes me wonder how they're going to try and cobble together this Spider-Man universe. And I think they want to get some distance between that so they have a big hit, because it seems like any sort of multiverse Spider-Man movie works well, but you start throwing in, you know, characters like Morbius and do a terrible job directing the movie, you have a problem. I'm not going to be predicting a cascading number of changing release dates because of this, and I don't think it has anything to do with COVID response or anything. I just think that it's interesting that Sony's taking one of its most popular properties and shifting it a year down the line. The final thing I want to note is in the box office, the Fantastic Beasts movie was not so fantastic. It did okay in the box office. It made like over $40 million, and it's doing much better overseas, but it's still diminishing returns on the series as a whole. Part of the problem it's running into, it was like $200 million to make, partly due to COVID delays and COVID restrictions. Also on the list, Father Stu came in DOA with just over $5 million. And then part of that's because it's not a traditional Easter movie. It's just a faith-based movie, but it's not biblical and about Easter. Like I said, Morbius is hemorrhaging, and compare it to The Lost City, which was three spaces higher now on it, and it came out a week before. It's holding much better, and Morbius is just sliding down the mountain fast. So yeah, watch out this weekend. This is going to be interesting because there's three movies in specialty box office really right now. I mean, you've got The Northman, and I'll talk about that in a little bit because that is a major release. But then you've got The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, which is a Nicolas Cage movie where he kind of plays himself. They're marketing this in limited areas though. And I even asked specifically, can I get a screener or a screening of it? And I was told flat out no by the studio. And I'm like, well, you're not exactly marketing it to the rest of America. They're probably heavily marketing it in New York and LA and Chicago and the big cities, but in flyover country, they don't care. So I think it's going to not do as well as it could. And then The Bad Guys, which is an animated movie, they only screened that up in Cleveland. I was going to drive up for that. So the fact that they're doing very limited screenings of some of these movies to me says that they don't have a whole lot of faith in them. So we'll see. I think it's going to be a light box office this weekend. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Lightyear, which is coming to theaters on June 17th.
Buzz Lightyear to Star Command.
Come in, Star Command.
Why don't they answer?
Hey!
Shh! The robots!
The what? What is happening right now?
Alicia?
Oh no, that's my grandmother.
But, Socks, how long were we gone?
Meow, 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 meow. 62 years, 7 months, and 5 days.
What?
I hope you're ready for action, because all we needed was a pilot.
For what?
To destroy the alien ship.
This looks fun. You know, it's Pixar doing a science fiction adventure movie. Now, Pixar movies recently have really moved away from those poignant, emotional four quadrant films, you know, stuff like Inside Out and Up that touch everybody emotionally and are really well put together. And this looks like it's just going more for an excitement kind of movie. They've been changing that way with Pixar over the years. You no longer get the brilliant movie every single time. You get Turning Red, which is a Pixar movie. I think that has a limited market. You know, if you're talking about the people that's really going to impact. Lightyear seems to be a little bit more mainstream, but it might just be a sci-fi adventure, which will make it play well, I think, in theaters, which is why they're not going to put it on Disney Plus. But I don't know. This trailer looks fun. It looks like it's going to be a fun little action movie. And then the other one I want to hit really quickly is they came out with a teaser for Thor: Love and Thunder, which comes to theaters on July 8th.
I need to figure out exactly who I am. I want to choose my own path. Live in the moment. My superheroing days are over.
Remember what I told you. You ever feel lost? Just look into the eyes of the people that you love. Not me.
What? Just listening.
I enjoyed looking at this one. I can't wait for this one, partly because I love Taika Waititi, and I know he did some great stuff with Thor Ragnarok, and I'm looking forward to see what he does here. I like them bringing in the Guardians of the Galaxy. I think that works with everybody together, and it'll be an interesting way to see how they merge these characters and developing a bigger and more diverse Marvel world as we head forward into the next phase of Marvel, because there's a lot more to be done with Marvel. It just didn't end with Infinity War and Endgame. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to Thor: Love and Thunder quite a bit. That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Billy the Kid and Doctor Who: Legend of the Sea Devils. We'll be right back. welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about some new things on the television. And the first one I want to talk about is Billy the Kid. This epic series follows the humble beginnings of the legendary outlaw, Billy the Kid.
My family came to America on the promise of fair treatment for all. I want to believe that promise.
What is it you want to be, Billy? Out there, you can be anything you want to be.
I'm doing this for you, Ma.
How could we manage without you, Billy?
You see, Billy, there's a very fine balance between good and evil.
I talked about the TV series From a couple weeks ago, and that's also on Epics. Now, if you go on stuff like the Roku channel, and I think if you go on Fandango and a bunch of other places, you can access the first, at least the first episode or two or three of Billy the Kid. And I think you don't hit the paywall until you get to the later on into the series. It's supposed to whet your appetite and then, you know, make it worth the $5 to watch the rest of the series. But it's a Western, obviously, and it's meant to be a true story of Billy the Kid and his upbringing. And he's not a bad guy in this one. He's a sympathetic character, and we're supposed to see it from his point of view and see what makes him turn into the outlaw. See what happens to him at a young age and as he grows up. And I mean, it starts all the way back to when his family was in New York and they had just come over from Ireland. So they decided to move out west. And of course, things are never like what they're advertised. And, you know, the Old West is the Old West. So there was a lot of lawlessness and a lot of corruption. And then the fact that his father was... the way they played in the series, it's like he's got, you know, a level of depression and mental illness that he never quite gets over because they didn't exactly have Zoloft back in the 1860s or 70s. The series itself, I like the idea of it. It does feel a little low rent. If you watch the trailer, they throw a lot of the epic shots in the trailer, but it feels like it's a lower budget. It feels like, you know, some of these movies that are made for the Hallmark Channel where they're able to build the sets, but it doesn't feel as lived in. And part of it, I guess, is also realistic because you don't expect elaborate things when you're out in the frontier trying to build literally a city out of nothing. I think there's some good moments to it. It does drag the first couple episodes because you got to get through his childhood and kind of what makes him tick and what causes him to turn to a life of crime. But they always are trying to frame him as a reluctant criminal. You know, it's like, well, I don't really want to do this, but I have to do this. And I don't really want to kill this person, but if they push me to the point, I will. And, you know, at a certain point, that does become a little bit too gimmicky. And the movie itself, it reminds me of the kind of Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman kind of show where it's not meant to be huge actions or massive sets. But you know, it's an interesting look at Billy Kid. It's not quite my taste because it does sort of revel in the time period. And I'm not a big fan of just, you know, loving to exist in a time period presented in a movie. But I think if you're into Westerns and you don't want something as heavy or as sweeping as, or even as modern as Yellowstone or anything that's an offshoot of that, This will work for you. Like I said, you can go check it out. Go to epics.com. I think you can watch at least the first couple episodes for free. And then if you want to pull the ripcord, you can get, you know, like a $5 a month subscription. So I'm going to have to say, you know, I'm not a huge fan, but I think for the right people, this thing's going to kind of rock.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Doctor Who, The Legend of the Sea Devils. In this spring special, the Doctor and her companions find themselves 200 years in the past, trying to stop a violent overthrow of Earth.
Madame Chang! Pirate Queen!
Where's the crew?
That'll be us.
We don't stand a chance.
Yes, did you just stand up like this?
You're like a kid sometimes.
Thanks!
Say hello to my crew.
The world has been disrupted.
Because of you. Because of what you unleashed.
You want to create chaos.
It is our time.
Man the cannons.
They're not doing a new season of Doctor Who this year. They're doing four specials. They're not even movies, because these are basically hour-long TV specials. It's basically a four-episode series run. And I kind of have to call BS on that because don't say you're doing specials. Just tell us you're doing four episodes in this season, which I know the British do short seasons all the time. But usually with Doctor Who, you at least get 10 episodes or something. But this one only gives you four, and it's meant to wrap up Jodie Whittaker's tenure as the Doctor, because she's going to hand the reins off to somebody in the future. The story is about these sea creatures that have lived on the planet Earth for eons. They actually were here long before humans, but they lived underwater. Now, if you're a big fan of Doctor Who, you can go back, or if you got BritBox, you can go back and watch. It's, I think, the third Doctor in like the ninth season or something. They have an episode with the sea devils in it. And I went ahead and I watched that, and that's kind of a fun little, I mean, it's the rubber suit, old BBC 70s version of Doctor Who, but it gives you at least the background. Although, even though the older Doctor has encountered these characters, it wasn't until the 1970s, and this is like the beginning of the 1800s. Even at one point, Jodie Whittaker's character says, well, I've run into you before in the future. My biggest complaint, as much as I enjoyed this one as a standalone episode, I thought as an episode it's fine, but it just didn't seem to have enough of a wow factor or a uniqueness to warrant it being one of only four specials this season. When David Tennant was doing his run as the Doctor, they did one bridge season right before he ended his tenure where they did four movies, but they were like hour and a half movies. So they were legit full length Doctor Who films. And, you know, it wasn't just him with a new companion again. It did feel like a bridge of him getting ready to go. I don't feel that way with this episode. Now, they did the one on New Year's with the Dalek, and I really enjoyed that one. I thought that did something unique and it was self-contained. And even though there were no new companions, really, well, there's one new companion. But they gave them something different to do, and it felt like a nice little self-contained story. This one just feels like a blow-off episode. It doesn't feel terribly unique, aside from the fact that it's digging into a character that has shown up, you know, what, 50 years ago in Doctor Who's history past. The other thing that I have an issue with is they're leaning into this whole thing that Yaz, one of the companions, she's enamored with the Doctor and she's falling in love. And I'm sort of, here's the thing. They've had gay and lesbian stuff on Doctor Who for years. I don't care. But it's just like the first time we get a female Doctor and suddenly you have a lesbian companion who's falling in love with her. And I'm like, do we have to stampede into that? I mean, can't you just, I mean, you had whole seasons go by, especially with Peter Capaldi, where he had no love interest outside of River Song spilling over into one episode. And it's not uncommon for the companions to kind of have a thing for the Doctor. It's just they're trying to make this too real and developed, and it just feels trite. So that's the part I don't particularly like, and you're going down that road, which is just almost too easy. So I was a little disappointed with this Doctor Who episode. I think it could have been better. Hopefully the next one that comes out later this year will be. So I'm going to have to say Doctor Who and the Legend of the Sea Devils. While I have reservations, I'll still say it kind of rocks because it makes a decent one episode.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the Northmen and Polar Bear. To Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about The Northman. A Viking prince vows revenge on his uncle who killed his father and took his mother as a new bride.
I will avenge you, father. I will save you, mother. I will kill you, Fjallar.
Why would he stow away to such a hellish place?
To find what was stolen from me.
And what is that?
The kingdom. You must choose between kindness for your kin or hate for your enemies.
Your strength breaks men's bones. I have the cunning to break their minds.
This is directed by Robert Eggers, and he is best known for having done the two previous films, The Witch and The Lighthouse. both of those movies were very polarizing and very off-kilter. They were very much art house films. And I loved both of them. I dearly loved The Lighthouse. I thought The Lighthouse was fascinating because it wasn't really about a lighthouse. There was all this subtext. And even though it was pragmatically about these two wikis trying to keep the light burning, it was all symbology and ideas and subtext. And I found that to be a fascinating movie to watch. And The Witch, that one was hard for a lot of people to do, partly because it was a slow burn and it was only a 90-minute movie. But part of it is a lot of the dialogue was contemporary to its time. So you're talking about leaning out of Middle English. You know, it was like in the 1600s or something. So the language was a bit of a barrier for some people. So I know that both those movies were polarizing. This one's going to be a little polarizing, mainly because it does still have that intense, dark, twisted art house feel to it. But this is a relatively straightforward story, and it's the Hamlet story. You know, the prince whose uncle kills his father and beds his mother, and then he's got to seek revenge to them. And, I mean, it's Hamlet with a lot more blood and a lot less clothes. So it's and I'll talk about this when I talk about Star Trek later. I once said to my mom, who's a Star Trek fan, I said, I'm never a big fan of the Klingons in Star Trek because I'm like, they're just exhausting. Everything is about honor and growling and warrior things. And that's the way it is with Vikings as well. I mean, this movie is just doused in testosterone. And it's a lot of people about their shirts yelling at the screen and yelling at each other and yelling at the cameras. And if anything, this movie told me how horrible it would have been to live in that time, in that area of the world. But the movie itself, It takes itself very seriously. And so it is a little bit heavy. I mean, it's really heavy. And my biggest complaint about it is it's long. It's like 2 hours and 20 minutes. And neither The Lighthouse nor The Witch topped 2 hours. In fact, The Witch, like I said, was about 90 minutes. And those work. If you're going to do that really heavy, dripping, dramatic movie like that, that's intense and has these subtext and all these levels to it, it's exhausting to kind of have to make your way through 2.5 hours of it. I would have preferred a shorter version of this movie. I mean, there's a lot of interesting stuff that happens to it, but it does take its time and it is intensely serious. It has some beautiful imagery to it, especially when they start to get into images of Valkyries and Valhalla, you know, whatever sort of hallucinogenic drugs the Vikings were taking back then. It was some good stuff, apparently. So it's one of those movies I appreciated more than I personally enjoyed. It's really not my kind of movie. I like I said, the movies about warrior races. And I mean, with all the talk of toxic masculinity today, the Viking was just nothing but a toxic masculinity entire civilization. So I think it opens up some good things in there, but it could have been tighter. But for people who love that sort of period piece warrior revenge film, you're going to love it. And it's getting a lot of good buzz. I liked it, but I'm going to have to say, you know what you're getting into. It is not a mainstream film, even though it's probably going to be the biggest one this weekend. So I'm going to have to say The Northmen kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Polar Bear. Disney Nature releases this profile of a family of polar bears just in time for Earth Day.
Welcome to the Arctic, one of the harshest and most breathtaking places in the world. For this mother polar bear and her cubs, every day is an adventure. Every season brings new challenges. And danger can come from any direction. Somehow she must teach her cubs how to live and thrive in one of the world's most extreme environments.
Every year for, oh gosh, probably about 15 years or so, Disney has been releasing a nature documentary. They originally started putting these in the theaters. They did Earth, they did Oceans, they did like African Cats and Chimpanzee and Born in China. There were a whole bunch of these movies, and they always released it in April, corresponding with Earth Day. And it was sort of Disney going back to the well of their nature documentaries. They used to do a lot of these back in the 60s and 70s. And I really appreciate that. Now, they're meant to be something you could take a kid to. And in particular, now that they're moving a lot of them onto the Disney Plus service, so they're not putting them in theaters. But if you've got a high-def TV, it looks great. I mean, these are beautifully shot films. And it's the same people putting it together. Now, one of the things they do is they have narration to this. And they always get a celebrity. They once had Oprah Winfrey, and I think they had Pierce Brosnan do one. This one is narrated by Catherine Keener. And I do take a little bit of issue with how they do the narration. Traditionally, you just have the narrator telling the story behind it. And even something like when they did Monkey Kingdom or Chimpanzee or African Cats, and they gave characters and personalities to the animals that they portrayed, which is a diversion from how you should be doing a documentary, but that's okay because it's a kid's documentary. But they always had it as the narrator was sort of telling the story. In this one, Catherine Keener's narration is more first person from one of the polar bears. And I think that strays even farther than it should from the documentary, because then you're getting too close to the subject matter. Because then you're insinuating what they're thinking, and you're adding emotion and cognizance to them when you really shouldn't. And that really doesn't have a place in a nature documentary. So I think that that's problematic in this one. And it gets even worse, because anytime you watch a nature documentary, I've just learned over the years that you always have that call to action at the end, some environmental push of saying, well, you know, if you have one on the coral reefs, they're like, well, coral reefs are disappearing, blah, 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 blah. And it gives you a call to action to have better environmental policy, reduce your carbon footprint, et cetera, et cetera. And I've learned that that's in every nature documentary, and you can't get upset at that if you get annoyed with it. And when what's wrong with being kind to our environment? I think it's stupid to purposely hurt the environment. And if you can do something simple to reduce your impact, then you should. The problem with this movie is they bring up the environmental peril like every 10 minutes. And on top of it, they personify it onto the bears. For example, there's a scene where the narration is essentially saying, this is the least amount of sea ice I've ever seen, because one of the things is saying with a warming planet, you get less sea ice every summer. But I'm like, well, polar bears are only cubs for a year or two or three. So you're not talking about a 10-year span. And then they do some editing where it's clearly they dissolve from earlier in the spring to later into the summer, and you see the ice melted. Well, but that happens every year. And the implication is that's supposed to have happened over the course of a year, but really that's just a natural progression of ice melting over the summer. So it's kind of a bait and switch, and they massage the message. I mean, almost too much that it becomes pushy, that you're like, no, seriously, the polar bears are not worried about the sea ice because they don't think that way. They just exist and live. So I think they take it a little too far outside of the documentary realm. And I'm just like, tell a story about polar bears without trying to push the message of something. What's an 8-year-old going to do? The 8-year-old's not going to be able to reduce the carbon footprint. And it's not meant to show the beauty. It just shows the misery. And I think that that comes across too much in this movie. But still, it's a fine nature documentary. It's just, you got to get through some problems. And that's where I'm going to have to say, compared to the other ones they've done, this one kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Russian Doll Season 2 and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Star Trek Discovery. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the new releases this week and talk about Russian Doll Season 2. Years after being stuck in a time loop, Nadia discovers she's in another existential crisis when she finds herself traveling back to the 80s in her mother's body.
The universe finally found something worse than death. I broke time. Maybe we have unfinished business. So you're telling me that this family lost its gold twice on a train?
Nadia, don't mess this up. Maybe we're just supposed to, like, enjoy the ride.
There are things in life that cannot be explained. Inexplicable things happening is my entire modus operandi.
You're a time traveler.
I prefer the term time prisoner.
I was a huge fan of Russian Doll because of how out of the box it was. And I mean, yes, it was a time loop story, but it was a unique time loop story. And I thought they did some really neat stuff with it. Plus, I think Natasha Lyonne is fantastic in this series. I think she is funny and emotional. And I think she really makes you feel, but she also is very whimsical. She's that brash New Yorker, but she also has a heart. I really think that she does some incredible things in this series. And that continues in season two. Now, this is on Netflix. All the episodes have dropped this week. So you can burn through it in a weekend. It's easy to binge watch. And I like the fact that it also goes somewhere different. It doesn't just put her in another time loop. It plays around with time and metaphysical existential realities. And you still wonder if she's been dead this whole time. But it's fascinating to watch because in this season, she's much more accepting of what's going on because she went through this whole time loop nonsense. And so she's like, oh, crap, the universe is at it again. So she accepts it. And it's her trying to figure out a way to glean a message of why this is happening to her and what she's trying to do to fix things or affect the future. And the resolution isn't spoon feeding itself to you. You can get to the end of the series on both seasons and be like, wait, what was the message there? And you really kind of have to think about it. I think the message is different for every person who watches it. But I think it has a lot to say about predestination and making your choices and what's locked in, how other people make choices for you. And, you know, sometimes you do things without knowledge of something and you will end up making worse decisions because you didn't have that knowledge, whether you were just being forcefully ignorant or you just had no idea what was going on. So I think it's a fantastic series and I really like where they went with this. I felt that they managed to give all the characters something to do in this new iteration of it. And I like the fact that it went into new territory, but kept the same logical world that exists for what they set up with Russian Doll in season one. So I'm a huge fan of this series, and I think Natasha Lyonne is amazing in it. So this is absolutely worth watching. It's a little bit weird and a little bit different, but if you saw the first season and you like that, you should like this one. So I'm going to say Russian Doll season two totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. I'm going to do a spotlight on an existing series, and it wrapped up, I think, about 2 months ago, a month or two ago, for the latest season, and that was Star Trek Discovery. So I had recently gotten the Paramount Plus app and got an account for that to watch the stuff, and so I'm catching up with some Star Trek stuff. I'm watching the original series, which is a lot of fun. It's a little bit dated, but it's fun. I'm catching up on Enterprise, which is okay. It's just that theme song is terrible. It is just the worst theme song I've ever heard for a science fiction show in the history of time. But Star Trek Discovery was the flagship release on Paramount Plus back when it was CBS All Access. I'd gotten CBS All Access a couple years ago and started watching Discovery and I broke up with the show. I was like, I can't watch this anymore. Well, I said, I'm going to knuckle down and finish it because it went for four seasons so far and they got a fifth one coming up. So I figured it's time to give it another good old college try. So Star Trek Discovery, this Star Trek series kicks off about 10 years before Kirk captains the Enterprise and ends up flinging itself deep into the future.
What exactly is this anomaly?
We're not certain.
Our ship was hit by something.
Together, we will meet this threat to our shared galaxy.
Until we understand the anomaly well enough to predict its path, billions more lives will be at risk.
Not on our watch.
Leadership is about balance.
Your acts of bravery are huge swings of the pendulum. And there is a very fine line between a pendulum and a wrecking ball.
The big difference between this, and Picard does this as well, the big difference between this and the old series, this one has an overreaching arc and one story that follows the whole season. Whereas the old episodes were just an exploration of the week. They sometimes did two-part episodes and callbacks and stuff, but pretty much each episode was a self-contained story. But this one, each season has an overall arc. And in the first season, it's the Klingon War that happens early in Starfleet's history. Now, I was not a fan of that season. It was clear that when they made that first season of Star Trek Discovery, they said, let's make a Star Trek series, but let's take out a lot of the stuff that makes it Star Trek. And they just made it Star Wars in the Star Trek universe. So it was all about shooting, and it's a war series, whereas Star Trek has always been about exploration and discovery and cerebral science fiction. Even if some of the old episodes are kind of dumb, they were still trying to use a smart approach to science fiction. So I thought that the first season was a little bit rough. And then they did the second season, which was better, but it was dealing with this, basically this temporal anomaly that was happening. And when they got to the third season, they got kicked into the future, like 1,000 years, where they're having to try and pick up the pieces of a decimated Federation. And so then this season, they have been trying to stop this anomaly that's wiping out planets. And that's a little tiresome. I am tired of science fiction where the enemy or the antagonist is something that's basically wiping out entire planets. I mean, fine, in the original Star Wars, blow up Alderaan, but we don't have to blow up a planet in every single Star Trek series or Star Wars series. We can have a smaller threat. That's the same thing with the Marvel movies and superhero films of saying, you know, do we have to lay a city to waste in every climax? Can we have a smaller climax? Because it gets just exhausting and you got nowhere else to go. One of the things I'm not a fan of, Discovery is a ship and it uses this spore drive that can basically teleport it anywhere in the galaxy. And I get why they did that, because they needed to have some sort of new technology. And that's, I think, why they threw them into the future, because you can't have that technology not existing in any other of the series. So they kind of just got rid of the technology, went on into the future. So that doesn't bother me as much. Now, some of the characters, Michael Burnham's okay. She's the main character, and she's had to work her way up from mutineer to captain. She's fine. I love Saru, who's the first officer. He's the real tall alien, played by Doug Jones. He's fantastic. I think he's fantastic. He's a great actor. I love seeing him getting a solid part. My favorite character of all is Tilly, who's the redheaded engineer ensign who, she's very intense, but I love her. And I also love Tignataro in there. She shows up in like the second or third season and she becomes a recurring character, and she's fantastic. And cause Tignataro, basically any movie or TV show she's in, she delivers lines like she's just annoyed she's there. She's like, ah, geez, I got to do these lines now that I'm in this big movie. Okay, here it is. And I just love her delivery. I like Stamens as one of the engineer chiefs because he's so inflexible. They have this one character, and I know some people have complained about this. There's this one character who's a non-binary person, and they're making a point to use proper pronouns, whereas nobody would bat an eye at this in the Star Trek future because you're dealing with non-gender-specific aliens and creatures all the time, and probably things with 5 or 6 different genders. So, you know, having to be flexible with pronouns is probably nothing big, but I get the whole thing of representation. But this character has a boyfriend and he's awful. His character's name's Gray, and I realize why I hate him. It's because he's a terrible actor. He's so boring and so flat and can't emote at all. He just looks so out of his depth. I mean, he's the kind of character that Wesley Crusher beat up at the Academy. Fortunately, that character doesn't show up too much on it. So I like him being in the far-flung future because they can kind of do whatever they want to and they're not impeding other existing storylines. But I've liked them as they've gone on. It sometimes gets a little bit too hand-wringy. Sometimes the threat is bigger than it needs to be. Actually, all the time for threats bigger than it needs to be. And they kind of need to dial back on that just so it's not so exhausting. But I consider myself a fan now. For somebody who watched Star Trek quite a bit as a kid and then watched The Next Generation in college, I'm satisfied. So I'm going to have to say Star Trek Discovery kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
New things that are available on VOD. We've got X and The Outfit, and that's it. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Memory. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.